If you've done any Arduino development, then you're familiar with the loop, or rather, setup and loop. But what if you're in an environment or on an operating system where the loop isn't required, or maybe even undesired? What do you do then? I'm Jared Venz, and this is Breaking Out of the Loop with The Maker Show. Loop-style development has been around for a very long time. In fact, it's been pretty much the default way of programming since the beginning. Whenever there have been loops, there have always been interrupts as well. Interrupts are the classic way of breaking out of the loop. And even in DOS or assembly, when you read a key from STDIN, the underlying system uses interrupts to wait for a key press from the keyboard. But all that changed in the early 80s when Apple released the Macintosh and Microsoft released Windows 1.0. Now developers were no longer in charge of dealing with the hardware directly, the operating system took care of that for them. Instead of directly pulling hardware, developers would create a method called the window proc, and they would handle messages sent to them by the operating system. Messages like WM L button up that would get passed whenever the user released the mouse button over a control. Fast forward to 1991 and Microsoft released Visual Basic 1.0. And with it, developers got even further away from interfacing with hardware through the concept of events. A developer can drag a button on the screen and double-click it to subscribe to the button's click event. This event-driven model has remained largely unchanged for the last 25 years. In fact, it's the same model that we use today for the new Windows 10 apps and the Universal Windows platform. Using events allows us to say, "Hey, operating system, just wake me up and let me know when there's something I need to do." And when we use events, that gives time slices back to the OS to do whatever it needs to do. This allows our applications to do cool things that they never could do before, like, say, 3D animations. Events are used in Windows for all sorts of things, and since Windows 8.1, there's actually been a dedicated event system for sensors. In this example, we're creating an instance of a light sensor, and we're asking it to report to us every 500 milliseconds the reading of the light level in the room. We can change the amount of light reaching the sensor simply by covering it up, and we can see the results in real time in the Visual Studio output window. So how does this apply to makers? In August of 2015, Microsoft released Windows for IoT Core, and with it, the ability to run Windows 10 UWP applications on devices as small as the Raspberry Pi 2. As Rachel showed in her recent episode, we can use interrupts on Arduino to break out of the main loop and do things like count coins from a coin acceptor. We can do the same thing on Windows IoT Core, but interrupts are actually translated into events. Here we'll create a simple application that uses GPIO pins, and we'll subscribe to the value changed event. Whenever the value of the pin changes, we'll write the value of the pin to the debug window. Now we can deploy the application to a Raspberry Pi 2 running Windows 10 IoT Core. And we can debug the application with Visual Studio. You can see that whenever we press or release the push button, the debug window shows us that the pin is falling or rising. Now, because many sensors, even analog ones, provide digital triggers, we can use this to our advantage. For example, we can use a proximity sensor to detect when something comes close to our circuit board. But wait. wait, something's wrong here. There's a lot of noise from this sensor, and it seems to be triggering when it shouldn't be. This is caused by electrical noise from the sensor, and one of the really awesome things about Windows IoT Core is that we can ask it to debounce the sensor for us, or smooth out those readings. Here, we'll just set the pin.debounce property to a time span of 250 milliseconds. That will automatically make sure that we'll only get a reading if the value is stable for at least a quarter of a second. But what if your sensor doesn't provide a trigger? How can we continue to read values from it without interrupting the operating system? Well, we can start by using a timer. There's been a timer class in the .NET framework forever, but the timer class isn't exactly friendly with the XAML UI system. Instead, we can use a class called the dispatcher timer, which basically does the same thing but plays well with the UI. We can create a dispatcher timer. We can set its time span to every 100 milliseconds. And start it. In the timer tick handler, we can write out to the debug window the sensor value, which in this case, we'll just use the value of the pin. Now this approach will work, but we're limited to the resolution of the dispatcher timer. We can only do work as often as that timer can tick. And also, every time we're doing work, we're actually doing work on the UI thread. Really, the right way to do work as quickly as possible on IoT Core is to create a new task. When we create a new task, we're actually scheduling work to be done on a new thread, which probably means it's going to be scheduled on another core. This frees up the main core to continue doing its own work, like rendering the screen. First, we'll create a variable that tracks whether or not it's okay for us to continue doing work. That way, when we want to shut the work down later, we can just set this flag to false. Next, we'll create a method that actually does the work. And inside of this method, we'll create a while loop. And inside of that loop, we'll print out our sensor value. Now we'll create a variable to hold the task. And we'll create that task by calling task.run and passing in the method that we want to execute. There's a couple overloads for the run method, so we're going to go ahead and cast our doWork method to an action so it knows which overload to use. Calling task.run actually starts executing the task right away. But when we want to shut that task down, when we're done with our work, we can just go ahead and set that flag to false. Now, this is a recommended way of scheduling work on Windows IoT Core. But didn't we just put ourselves back in a loop? One of the easiest ways to read sensor data on Windows IoT Core is to use a NuGet package called microsoft.iot.devices. To get the package, right-click on the project and say Manage NuGet Packages. At the top, switch to Browse, and type iot.devices, then click Search. Select the package called microsoft.iot.devices and click Install. Now we have access to a new type called the Analog Sensor. This was included in the NuGet package. To use an analog sensor, we need an ADC controller, an analog-to-digital controller. The IoT Devices library supports a number of ADC chips, and the one that I have on my board is the ADC0832. So I'm going to create that. Now in my circuit, my ADC0832 has its chip select pin connected to GPIO 18, its clock pin is connected to GPIO 23, and its data pin is connected to GPIO 24. Now, in order to use this chip, we actually need an ADC provider manager. We'll create the manager and we'll add our ADC0832 to the provider's collection. And then we'll get the real controller back by calling manager.getController async. We'll go ahead and read index 0. And since we're using await, our method also needs to be async. Now we can finally create the instance of our analog sensor. And in my circuit, the analog sensor is connected to ADC channel 0. Now I can simply set a report interval on the sensor. And finally, we can subscribe to the reading changed event. Now this pattern should look really familiar because we just saw it a few minutes ago with big windows when we subscribed to the reading changed event of the ambient light sensor. One of the differences here though is that I'm going to read reading.ratio. The analog sensor provides two different ways of reading the value, reading.value and reading.ratio. Reading.value reads the raw value from the ADC chip itself, and reading.ratio takes the total range of values into account and actually gives you back a percentage. Using ratio instead of value gives you the flexibility of swapping ADC chips and sensors in and out and still getting a percentage value back. Now, just like before when we were testing the ambient light sensor on big windows, we can see the light values in the output window. And just like before when we cover up the sensor, we can see the reading value changed. Now this time we're seeing the value as a percentage because we're reading the ratio from the sensor. And with this particular light sensor, the readings go towards ground as the light level increases. So that's why the numbers are actually inverse here. Now if we take a close look at this pattern again, it probably looks a lot like the event pattern. We've got our analog sensor, and then inside of that we have a report interval, and then we subscribe to the reading changed event. And this looks a lot like the timer and the timer tick pattern that we saw before, but it's actually more like a hybrid between the timer approach and the task approach. This isn't the exact code that's in the library, but it still gives you an idea how it works. We start by using the stopwatch class, which gives us a high resolution tick of when this method is beginning. Then we ask the sensor to do its work. That includes going out and reading the value, as well as raising the reading changed event. After that's done, we ping the stopwatch again to see how much time has passed, and we subtract the amount of time that's passed from the original report interval. If the report interval was 500 milliseconds, and the amount of time that it took to pull the sensor was 100 milliseconds, then we have 400 milliseconds left that we can yield back to the processor. This pattern allows us to support as many sensors as we want in the same loop. And as long as there's time left after reading all the sensors, we'll yield that time back to the processor. Now again, this isn't the exact code that's in the framework. For example, each of the sensors can have their own report interval, and this loop needs to be updated to account for that. But if you want to use this scheduler in your own programs, you can find it in the IoT.DeviceCore library in scheduler.cs. It has methods, for example, to schedule, unschedule, pause, and resume work. If you're using a managed language like C#, there's an even easier way with the Scheduled Updater class. You just pass in the default report interval, your method that should get called each time you're scheduled to do work, and then optionally a method that can get called the very first time your class is scheduled to do work. Now, one of the very common patterns in big windows is that updates are scheduled as soon as somebody subscribes to the event. For power and battery life reasons, updates are also unscheduled as soon as the last subscriber unsubscribes from the event. This framework includes a class called the Observable Event, which looks a lot like a regular .NET event, but can take a scheduled updater into the constructor. This pattern takes care of automatically scheduling and unscheduling updates as long as there are event subscribers. So let's recap our options for breaking out of the loop on Windows IoT Core. We can use hardware interrupts. They're included as part of IoT Core, and they're easy to use, but they're tied to a GPIO pin, which means they can only be triggered by a pin going high or low. We can use a dispatcher timer, And because it's not tied to a GPIO pin, we can update sensor values of any type. The downsides are that the timer is basically polling, and anything that we execute as part of the timer actually competes with the UI thread. Tasks give us a very important feature of being multi-threaded, which means they can run on a second core. That leaves a primary core available to keep updating the UI thread. The downside is that it can be a little bit complex to get a polling loop right, especially with multiple sensors. Scheduled Updater is based on tasks, so it has a lot of the benefits, and it adds the ability to start and stop automatically with event subscriptions. The downside is that it's a new pattern that's probably not familiar to developers, and it requires a third-party library. Special sensor classes in the IoT.devices library are probably one of the easiest ways to get going. They return specialized data types, like temperature for a temperature sensor. They support subscriptions, and they follow the same pattern that's followed on big windows for sensors. Again, IoT.devices is a third-party library, but you can get it on NuGet by searching for microsoft.iot.devices, or you can find the source code and documentation at aka.ms/iotdevices. Well, hopefully this video has helped you transition from loop-style programming to event-driven programming on Windows IoT Core, and I hope you learned a little bit about the IoT.devices library. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out to me on Twitter or even just send me an email. I'm Jared Benz, and this has been Breaking Out of the Loop on The Maker Show.